Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer Arm Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the founder and CEO of Church Answers.
In 2019, there are going to be so many issues that we'll be talking about. There's so much going on in the church. Some people would have a fatalistic attitude. Some would have a pessimistic attitude. I remain an obnoxious optimist about some of the things that will be taking place in 2019. In the process, however, we need to talk about some things that leaders should consider doing. And one of these seems so trite, so mundane, so pedestrian that you would say, why are you even talking about this, Rainer? I think it's important, and it's about tracking attendance. And we'll be talking about tracking attendance, and we are always have been on track with Vander Blumen Search Group, our sponsor from the beginning sponsorship.
Yeah, Vander Blumen Search Group is the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped thousands of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vander Blumen Search Group by visiting WeStaffTheChurch.com.
Okay, let's get into this about why tracking attendance is important. We're dealing with something that has a historical note to it. You can go back to the 1930s. You remember then?
No. But, you know, you were in your mid-30s by then.
Yeah. It is amazing that I have persevered in almost 2020 now, and I was born in 1900. Goodness, here's the 120-year-old man still doing podcasts or doing podcasts. It goes back to the 1930s. A man named Donald McGavran was on the mission field in India. And one of the things, among other things that he did, was he kept records, because the more he kept records, the more he was accountable for sharing the gospel, for seeing if there was really fruit that is taking place, and finding receptive fields. Yeah. He brought that type of mentality back to the U.S. when he started teaching, founded a mission school. He became the Dean of World Missions at Fuller Seminary, Dean of World Missions and Director of Fuller Institute at Fuller Seminary. That began And I'll get to the history in just a moment. For those of you who are yawning, I don't want you to go.
I'm learning here.
I don't want you to go to sleep in your car if you're listening to this. But that began a movement that later became known as the Church Growth Movement. One of his early professors at the dean at school was a guy by the name of Peter Wagner, and Peter Wagner took this information and took it to all kind of different extremes, if you will, sometimes in the Signs and Wonders movement, sometimes in the Numerical Emphasis movement, and was a lightning rod in many ways. He died just a few years ago. Actually did my dissertation on Peter Wagner. It was absolutely fascinating when I was doing my PhD studies. But what happened with the Church Growth Movement, there was such an emphasis on numbers and on tracking and on accountability and on numerical realities that many church leaders developed this aversion to numbers. And so we have, among many church leaders today, a mentality that says numbers and number counting is not something you do. I almost called it evil, but that's not how they feel. They just don't think that that's something you should be doing in your church. It's not that important. I think we've thrown the metaphorical baby out with the bathwater. I think we need to start looking at some of these realities without going to the extremes that were obvious by many in the church growth movement. And by the way, I got a note on social media from Gary McIntosh. He was part of that movement, kind of like I was. Learned under Wagner. I didn't actually have Wagner as a professor, but greatly influenced by him. And he was wishing me Merry Christmas back in December. And I was just thinking about, man, we're the third generation, and we're about to die out. I mean, Gary, Gary's roughly my age, so I'm putting
his. He's like, there. Thanks a lot, man.
But you had the McGavran era, then you had the Wagner era, and now you
Rainer
had this
era.
The next era, please. And so you've got this generation. I think what is happening is you had the McGavran era, which was pretty balanced, actually. Mm-hmm. Most people just say nope, and then it went to the extreme with the next generation. It's look, I've seen this in the Reform movement.
Yeah.
You have people who come in with Reform theologies, and then the next generation comes in, and if you're not Reformed, then you're
going to hell.
Yeah, something like that.
Basically.
Yes. And so I've seen the same thing with the church growth movement, that we're seeing some balance take place. Okay, enough of history. I took 5 minutes of everybody's time with a little historical background, but I want us to get into why we have stayed away from this, which brings us to a pretty good natural segue. First point. Yeah,
we've got to overcome our aversion to numbers.
Yes. Numbers are not inherently evil. There were two censuses taken in the Old Testament. One was of Satan, one was of God. Numbers are important if they are used for the right reason. Numbers by themselves have no intrinsic value. However, they can keep us accountable. They can let us know how we're, it's a stewardship thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is basically a stewardship issue. And if you're not tracking numbers, you're basically saying, I am not concerned about the people behind the numbers. Now, some people would disagree with that, but I would say, number one, we've got to overcome our aversion to these numbers.
And secondly, the two most common areas to track are your worship attendance.
Yep.
And your group attendance.
Yep. Let's talk about both of those, since we have.
Let's.
Two of them. First of all, worship attendance. The most common question I get on worship attendance, actually, there's 1A and 1B, two common questions. 1A is how?
You count.
Yeah, but there's some people who say if you only knew, we got 400 people showing up. Well, I learned from Southeast Christian in Louisville, Kentucky many, many years ago that all you do is you sign counters to certain sections. And they count that section, yeah. And then they add them all up. It really works really well.
That's amazing how that works.
Some,
if we count every section and every person in every section, we get an accurate count for the day.
And so,
amazing.
Some churches have tried actually cameras and gone back and used that, but their kids lying down on the pews and there is
people move. I mean, it doesn't take long.
Yeah, it does. And average attendance Southeast Christians over 20,000. If they can do it. Most churches can do it.
Yeah.
So question number one is...
Shoot, I've been to a few things with you where you've spoken and you could have counted it during your sermon.
Oh,
from the pulpit.
I think I did.
On probably both hands.
And I said, what am I doing?
we ate well on those trips, though.
Oh, my goodness. Some of the denominational responsibilities I had are responsibilities as a denominational leader. So that's the number one question. Number two question is, who do I count?
Everybody.
Yes, but that's
once.
Not it. That's it. Once. Do you count? A lot of churches don't count the kids that are not in the worship service.
Okay.
So we say, so that you can have apples to apples, count everybody who is on campus one time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have three services, let's say you have five services, that'd be a lot. You have three on Sunday, one on Saturday night, and one on Tuesday night, mm-hmm. whatever. Add up everybody that's non-duplicating headcount. What if you don't know who's duplicating and who's not? Estimate.
Figure it out.
Yeah. Use a consistent number.
Yeah.
So it'll be apples to apples. Yeah. So those are the two things that we have on worship.
All right. So a couple years ago, I read a book. Well, I read books a lot, but I read one.
Attention, all listeners of Rainer on Leadership.
I walked
Jonathan
into that.
Jonathan read a book 2 years ago.
Boy, did
he
I walk into that
Dr.
One.
Seuss.
Goodness gracious, I walked into that. All right. So I read a book, and in the book, the pastor was talking about how the previous pastor had counted attendance.
Yes.
And he was like, they had always said the church ran X. It's like, I got there, I started preaching, and I'm looking out in the crowd. I'm like, there's no way.
There's no X here.
There's no way that we're reaching this. Where are these people? So he started figuring out that they were counting anybody who was basically a member of the church, but homebound or nursing home or things like that. Would count them every week in the weekly total.
Yeah.
So say, I mean, it was a big church, big first, you know,
downtown
type big church. They had maybe 2,000 people on the roll that never graced for one reason or another, homebound, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But every week they were showing up in the count.
Yeah.
And he's like, wait a minute, this is not right. So how do you, what about those?
Well, you readjust. If you're that new a pastor.
Well, and he did. And he's like, this is actually what we're running, folks.
Yeah. Worship attendance is, guess what?
People
worship
who are
attendance.
At worship.
Yeah. Some people are beginning to count those who are online as well. And those numbers, we have a 60,000 attendance church.
No, you don't.
No, apples to apples, if you want true accountability, is who is present, non-duplicating headcount, non-duplicating attendance every single week.
Okay, now groups.
Yeah, groups are pretty easy. At the end, look, any
basic... It depends on what kind of groups you got. It's a lot easier, I think, whenever you have Sunday school on campus.
I disagree. I disagree.
Getting people to report home groups is a lot harder than getting people to turn it in on Sunday mornings.
No, I disagree. If you get a little bit of organization. Here's what happened. I'm a part of a community group. Now, oh, no, mine's on campus.
On campus on Sunday mornings.
But everybody else does the same thing. What'd you say?
I said on campus on Sunday mornings.
Yes.
You have a Sunday school class.
I do. Yeah, our community group / Sunday school class with Lifeway curriculum, gospel project. But the other groups do the same thing. The moment that group starts, the leader of the group, usually two, gets a email. And it says, punch this button. Who's there? And
nice.
And there's your lineup. You go, did folks was me punching who's in attendance.
Missing the video of this, folks.
If there's a visitor, you type it in real quickly and boom, you hit it and it's done.
Roll call done.
Yeah. We use church community builder.
Yeah, CCB.
But a lot of the church software programs do that. We are a church that's averaging 150, 160 in attendance. Any church can do it. I mean, this is not advanced software. It's pretty inexpensive.
I've never heard of that, so I like that.
Yeah, it's a lot better than turning in the rolls and that kind of thing and someone collecting them in a tin box. Yeah. So all you have to do is, and if someone does not do so, you send them an email so we didn't get you count.
All right, so that brings up the next question. Which groups do you count? Because that goes back to the nursing home. You know, we do a thing for the nursing home on Tuesday mornings at 9. Or whatever.
You would count those who could otherwise attend the worship service.
Okay.
So basically what you're looking for is an active on-campus attendance, even if the groups are meeting off-campus, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, these are
those who can come to worship. You want apples to apples. You want to be consistent about that. That way you can measure a lot of different things. Attendance frequency. You can measure stewardship issues. There's so much that you can look at when you have those good numbers.
All right. Number three, knowledge of attendance leads to better pastoral care.
An example of this was I got a notice that such and such had missed three straight Sundays. Okay. Well, three straight groups.
Yeah.
So I sent an email.
Yeah. Beth has the same type of thing set up for kids that miss multiple Sundays in a row.
Yeah.
Does the same thing.
Well, this built into the software.
Yeah. Boom.
So just the very fact that we're counting lets us know that someone has been missing. And here's the thing about it. Because of attendance patterns, it is possible for someone to be out 2, 3, 4 months and not really be missed because you got different people coming in at different times.
Especially with multiple services.
Multiple services and different groups and all kind of possibilities. And so this leads to better pastoral care because when people are absent, there is a reason behind it. It may be something as simple as we're moving south for the winter.
Had to work or whatever it may be.
But you find out. The worst thing you can do is nothing. So it's good pastoral care.
Right. Also, it leads to better stewardship.
Oh, this is a biggie. I wish I had my number in front of me. We've used it before. About the multiple of someone who goes to a group versus that one in worship attendance, how much more they give. Oh, I'm about to say it and I don't remember it. It's 3, 4, 5 times as much. But someone in a group, that was a study many, many years ago by Robert Wuthnow. And Robert Wuthnow in his book, God and Mammon, examined those who are in groups and found out that percentage was so much higher. So if you're looking at attendance, look, attendance is going to go up when someone attends a worship service. I'm sorry, giving is going to go up when someone attends a worship service. And then secondly, giving is going to go up even more when someone is in a group. So if you are highly cognizant of this attendance, both in groups and worship, you not only are providing more pastoral care, you are also providing information on greater stewardship. And we can get that number later. But the point is this, if you move someone from infrequent worship attendance to frequent worship attendance, their giving goes up. If you move someone from worship attendance to worship plus groups, their giving goes up significantly. And we see that phenomenon again and again in churches. So it does lead to better stewardship.
Well, the more you're invested, the more you invest.
Oh, that's good. Jonathan just had a pull out.
I don't know if that was good or not, but it was yeah, pithy.
That's good.
All right. Number five, and this is fascinating. Those who do the counting and worship services usually provide great insights.
There are seating patterns.
They see things.
Yes, they see things. And, you know, John usually is here with Betty, and he's been bringing the kids by himself. I wonder what's going on. And I hadn't noticed that. You know, one particular one had a special needs kid, and they stopped bringing the special needs kid, and found out that someone had said something to the person in the worship service about the sounds the special needs kid was making. He was not able to go outside the worship service. So again, they didn't stop coming, but they found. They let someone babysit at home so that they could rotate and come. Those are the type things. I wish you could see Jonathan's expression. He is really ticked off at whoever that person is. Mm-hmm. But that's those who are counting who get an idea. Now, what if someone moves from one part of the worship center to the other? That's a life change issue. I don't know what's going on at that point. They are. I am being highly intentional. Oh, I did something in our church. Again, our church average attendance 150, 160. So everybody keep that in perspective. We have three sections, and the middle section has as many as at least toward the back rows, 12 to 15 seats. Mm-hmm. People weren't sitting in the middle.
Oh, okay.
Although I created a middle aisle. Just did it by myself.
So now it's like seven or eight across instead of 15.
Yeah, and so those rows now have four end seats instead of two, and people like to sit on the end.
Uh-huh.
It filled up.
Wow.
It just filled up immediately because they went to those end seats because now you've got all these kind of end seats.
Huh.
So I did an experiment and discovered people don't like to walk over too many people.
No, they don't.
They'll walk over two, but they're not going to walk over more than two.
Went to a basketball game about a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
Wound up with like seats 9, 10, 11, and 12 in a row that had like 22 seats.
Ooh, right in the middle.
With my three kids.
Ooh.
It was not pleasant.
You know.
Well, it was. I mean, we still enjoyed it, but it was just like I felt bad every time I had to get up to take Micah to the restroom or to get drinks or whatever it may be.
Or you had someone walking in front of you and you couldn't see because that was
free. I was in the middle. Nobody was walking in front of me. I was the perpetrator.
They went one of two ways. Yeah, when I go to a sporting event, I look to see if it's aisle seats for that very reason.
Yeah.
Because at my age, I need to get up more frequently.
Well, yeah, with the little kids, it helps for me.
Yes.
But, yeah. All right. Number six, attendance is a key indicator of discipleship. We kind of touched on that throughout the show.
Yeah, attendance is related to discipleship in serving, in giving. In attitude, in Bible study, the more frequently someone attends, the greater the better the discipleship metrics are. So start counting people because you're not counting a crowd, you're counting disciples.
Ooh.
Because discipleship is growing as a result. Attendance is not merely buttocks in the pews. It is people who are growing as disciples because they're hearing the word, they're worshiping with one another, they're in groups. Many reasons they're growing as disciples. So attendance does result in greater discipleship, all other things being equal.
All right, and finally, you got to avoid the classic pitfalls of attendance counting. What would those pitfalls be, Dr.
Well, it's taking it to an extreme. It's
doing things to get the numbers up.
Yeah,
just for numbers' sake.
The numbers become an end instead of the means to a greater discipleship, and it happens. I mean, there are too many times where we're so focused on the numbers, and this was one of the detriments. This was one of the negatives of the church growth movement, that there were too many people, too many leaders who were focused upon the numbers. Our denomination, as an example, gave a lot of awards based on numbers in the 90s, even while our denomination was beginning to decline. And so, you know, you can, but okay, it was primarily my company that was doing that too. But again, that began to persuade people to move toward numbers instead of the real good, solid reasons behind getting the numbers. So, by the way, Church Answer is going to be doing something in the future. I'm not going to give a specific date. We are going to start having recognition ceremonies.
Oh, there we go.
It'll be really good.
The Rainer Awards are back. The Rainies. All right. So, one question on the pitfalls of attendance counting, and we've seen churches do, you know, gimmicks, different things like that. We talked to one pastor one time, and he was telling us about the previous pastor at his church and the gimmicks that he would do to get the numbers up. And mm-hmm. he said it was amazing how he knew exactly what gimmick, whatever it would be, to do to get the numbers where they needed to be just for numbers' sake. Now, you and I, we've talked a lot about on this podcast and other as well about Invite Your One
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the one-time event. So talk to me the difference in a gimmick and maybe a one-time event or something like that. What are the difference in the two of those?
A gimmick is usually a hook that has to become greater the next time. So whatever you're doing this time, you have to at least do that or something better, whatever the attraction may be. That becomes attractional invitation. When you do Invite Your One, what you're attempting to do is organic invitation.
Mm-hmm.
You're just trying to get someone to invite yeah. someone.
It's more of a culture change than a one-time shot.
Oh, it is a definite culture change. When people begin to see if we invite them, they actually will say yes. That becomes a culture shift, as opposed to these gimmicks are usually not relationship centered. They're usually event or some type of methodology centered yeah. rather than relationship centered.
It's almost like an exchange, like you come and you get this or something like that instead yeah. of.
It would be like someone saying free food to you.
I'm there.
Yeah. You would come.
I am there.
Yep.
So.
And, right. and then you pick your menu according to the church, and whoever has whatever food,
the best food that week, then I go there.
You will show up.
I've told you, I've really thought about a Wednesday night meal, like blog, like church meal blog. I think that'd be fun. Food.
You go do that. And in the meantime,
not many churches are doing Wednesday night meals anymore.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
Kind of getting away. I'm saddened by this.
There are reasons for sadness. That is not the one you should be sad about. Thank you, Midwestern Seminary, for being our sponsor.
Midwestern Seminary has an 81-hour MDiv that is just the right training for you and for full-time ministry leaders. It offers you everything you need and nothing you don't. You can join other students in vibrant Kansas City and train in a unique collaborative environment focused on the local church or study online in your current ministry context. Midwestern Seminary is developing a discipleship culture devoted to the local church and committed to God's unchanging word. You can start your training today at mbts.edu/mdiv. That's going to do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Well, one thing that I do want to talk about is one of our good partners, Generis. And they really have some good tools out there for stewardship that involve counting, that involve some other things. I would just encourage some of our listeners, if you can go to the homepage of TomRainer.com, and they have a do-it-yourselfer stewardship campaign. They understand the counting of God's funds in a great way. So I just want to give a shout out to them because they're doing it right, and I just want our audience to know about them.
All right. Thanks again for joining us here today on Rainer on Leadership, a member of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or in your favorite podcasting app, and join us online at TomRainer.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.